Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Week 7 Take the Points podcast. I am one of your hosts, Tom Zalesnok, and I'm broadcasting live on a Wednesday night from Hartford, Connecticut. And I'd like to introduce my co-host by reading a series of his text messages that were sent to me no more than 5 to 10 minutes ago. My computer just froze, so I'm restarting this piece of shit PC right now. I think these computers just break now, whether you look at porn or not. I mean, you used to know why someone's computer broke. Now, it's a number of reasons. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Dan Partridge, live from Phoenix, Arizona, via his cell phone.
Oh, hey everyone, recording via cell phone. Hope everyone can hear me all right. Yeah, there's some things going down over here. I don't know, the computer's not working today, so I'm just saying, like, I never even use this computer, literally, like, once a month, and it decides to break, and I'll stand behind my text messages. I used to like to know why people's computer broke, if they're a porn nut or not. Now they just break for fun, so, unless you got a Mac, but I guess that's what I have to do next. Moving on.
Dan, a lot of people make the mistake of thinking that your computer breaks because you look at a lot of porn, when in reality, it's just one really, really sketchy site.
That's pretty much how it works. Like, 99% of them are fine for your computer, then one's just awful. It just rips your hard drive apart like acid. So, we all have experience in that, or not. I don't know. So there you go.
It's too early to get into that in the show. We're recording early at about 7:27 p.m. on Wednesday night. Let's start with talking about some football, and perhaps we'll get to a discussion of the Hun.net long sleeve yellow t-shirts later on.
Yes.
Is there anything you want to recap from Week 6? Texas A&M beat Tennessee in a thrilling double overtime game. There wasn't much else that was super exciting. Alabama handled Arkansas pretty easily. Anything else, Dan?
You know, Tennessee just kept turning the ball over, and they outplayed A&M in that game. And there were spots in that game where they really could just said, oh, screw it, you know, and gave up and lost that game by 28 points. Hats off to everybody on the University of Tennessee for hanging in there, despite all the crap that went against them in that game, and give themselves a good chance to win. But Tennessee is pretty damn good, and, you know, they were a little bit undermanned last week. I don't know. I was impressed for the first time with Tennessee all year, actually in a loss, believe it or not. Kind of weird.
Same here. Unfortunately, the injury issues don't get any better, and they've got an even tougher opponent this week. But we will get to that. The only other game I want to mention is Michigan 78-0 over Rutgers. And the reason I find this game compelling is because this, I think, might have been the most one-sided game of all time, Power 5 versus Power 5. Rutgers at one point was down 71-0. Rutgers had 10 yards of total offense, and this is in the fourth quarter. Now, they finished the game with an astounding 39 yards of total offense, so they really exploded in that fourth quarter for an additional 29 yards. But Jim Harbaugh, I criticize him all the time for running it up and for being a little bit of a dick, but he had the backups in pretty early, and they were incapable of not scoring. The backups were just running over Rutgers, throwing the ball around. Like, he tried not to run it up, at least not to this degree, and he couldn't, because Rutgers is truly the worst team in college football. So, we'll be betting against them.
Iowa only beat them 14-7, which was sick. But anyway, that was one of my locks of the week last week. So that was a nice non-sweat. Also, Auburn was the other one, no sweat at all, 35-0 at half lane too. But
the other two, though, Danny, did not come in so nicely.
One out of two did. Oregon got mashed, but I had Texas over Oklahoma.
Oh, that's true. Okay, I apologize. You were 3-1. I think my opinion was skewed because of you picking Oregon plus 10. And I believe they lost by 59. So
yeah, it was pretty bad, but hey, all of them got the same. So 3-1 is pretty good. I'll take that. But no, seriously, going back to that Michigan game, it was just out of control. Rutgers is horrible. I'm sure Vegas will really inflate the lines. It'll be interesting to keep an eye on the next couple of weeks.
I want to talk about Oregon, if you'd like. I know they were your team a few years ago. You're sort of a free agent ever since the quote-unquote incident at Penn State. And even before then, you jumped ship. I've been hanging on by a thread. But you were searching for new teams. It was Oregon for a while. It was Baylor for a while, A&M. You've sort of bounced around each year and had a new favorite team. What's going on with Oregon? Is it time to fire Helfrich this season? Where does the program go from here?
Helfrich has to get absolutely canned as soon as possible. It's been a complete mess, and that'd be an understatement. You know, Phil Knight is given the school, I believe, I think it's $850 million that he's given to Oregon. Take eight of it and get a real head coach. Don't pay Helfrich three. There's no point. Like, go out and get anyone. You're a massive program. You have Nike. You can hire anyone you want. I mean, you should be able to. If Chip Kelly was able to recruit there, so should any big-name head coach. It's pretty embarrassing. Like, they thought that after Chip left, they can just – you know, move this other guy in who likes to run the same up-tempo crap. And it wasn't the same. It really shows you that Chip Kelly, as much as, you know, people like to rag him in the NFL, he was amazing at Oregon. And Oregon should fire Helfrich and offer Chip Kelly $10 million a year to come back. He'd be the king of Oregon and sit there for 20 years and go 11-1. You know, so pretty disappointed in Oregon. And I don't know. Until Helfrich is gone, it's unwatchable. And that's the first time you can say that in probably 10 years plus.
Is there an example of a team firing their coach, or not firing, but losing their coach, and then eventually going back to them a few years later? I'm sure there is. I just can't think of one off the top of my head. College, not NFL.
I know, same here. There's a couple. I think they all involve teams in the SEC or South somewhere off the top of my head. We will look that up for sure. That's really interesting. But no, seriously, San Fran's going to go 4-12 this year. He should say thanks for the signing bonus. Great, I'm out. Quit, go back to Oregon, start recruiting, start smashing people in a weak conference. It'll be fun.
I mean, any chance Colin Kaepernick plays this week? The 49ers lose to the Bills. Chip Kelly gets fired immediately. Helfrich loses another game. He's fired. Maybe Chip Kelly could just come in early November. Why wait?
He could, and he'd just be like, all right, I'm ready to coach. Like there's no adjustment period needed for that guy.
No, he probably still knows some of the guys.
I know, for sure. So, yeah, Chip Kelly could just slide back into that role. It'd be pretty funny. But, no, he's not going to get fired for at least 2 years. But he should leave if he has the option. Anyway, the point is, Oregon, come on, spend some real money. Like, if you spend $3 to $5 million, you're not going to get a national championship coach. You spend $7 to $10 million, you have a shot. And there's no excuse because you have Phil Knight right up the road, so... wake up, spend the money, do it right, or else I'm not going to watch. Thanks.
All right, let's move along to the lines. We're skipping Thursday and Friday games because they're just, frankly, not good enough to merit discussion. We'll go straight to Saturday. Just so the listeners know, there are some decent games this week. We'll talk about all of the decent ones. And then I've got several topics that we can discuss afterwards, including the much-anticipated thoughts on the MacGyver reboot, if Dan chooses. I also have a few other choices that you could pick from, so you can decide whether you want to leave our many listeners hanging and not give them what they want, or let me talk about the new MacGyver. That's your call, Dan.
Well, I'm gonna have to sit on that one for a little bit, and we'll revisit that later.
Do you want me to give you the topics now, and you can think about which one you want to pick later?
Sure, I would love that.
All right, this will be the tease for people. This will be what we talk about after we get through the games. So these are, I'm only going to give you a word or phrase, and this is what you'll have to think about. So MacGyver reboot, that's choice one. Choice two is World War III. The next choice is third best Weezer album. And the other choice is people who say as a father. And then I put one in there for you if you want to discuss, which is legalize it, which is, I realized every year we do our annual rant about why they should legalize sports gambling. And we were talking about it earlier. So if you want to do that rant and get it out of the way for this year, we could do that as well later too.
Thank you for giving me some clues. We will talk about that later.
By the way, there's a lot of topics, so we could cut in between games too if you want. But we'll start with NC State at Clemson, Saturday, October 15th. NC State coming off a win over Notre Dame in a monsoon. They would be undefeated if not for their tight loss against East Carolina week two. Clemson looking very strong. They are an 18-point favorite. So what do you think?
Clemson at home should absolutely wax NC State. They're starting to come on at the right time. It was a smart move for them to kind of just mail in September. Now that they're still undefeated and we're in October, it's smart. It's important to kind of improve as the year goes on, and especially for a team that lost in the national title game. All they got to do is just win. It doesn't matter how. So people just like forgot about Clemson for like 5 weeks. So, like, really funny, including us a little bit. We barely talked about Clemson, which is pretty stupid in hindsight. But I think Clemson's really rolling. If this game's at NC State, it'd be a great trap spot, but it's not. So lay it with Clemson.
This would be a good Thursday night NC State trap game, but instead it's on Saturday afternoon. We don't know much about NC State. They had some wins. They're 4-1. The next four games for NC State, I was looking this up and I wrote it down because this will really tell us if they're a real decent team or if they're just sort of fooling us. So they have at Clemson, at Louisville, home for BC, and then home for Florida State. So 1 month from today, we will know exactly where NC State stands. Until then, I would go Clemson or I would stay away. Kansas yep. State at Oklahoma, Oklahoma minus 10.5. I have zero thoughts on this game.
Yeah, it's really hard. I'm completely staying away. You're right.
It's hard to get it up for the Big 12 this year, so to speak. The only team they have, they have Baylor undefeated, ranked 11th, but we'll get to them. I mean, Baylor's not impressive. Oklahoma's already played themselves out of the playoffs, so has Texas, Oklahoma State. So I think everybody's assuming they're not going to get a playoff spot, and that's it. Tough to watch when you're, a non-regional fan.
You're right.
Do you have a pick for this game, or do you not care?
Staying away.
All right. West Virginia -1 at Texas Tech. Now, nobody cares about the line, Dan. The important number is your over-under. Opened at 80.5, already up to 83. I expect that, and I checked this afternoon, so we can assume it's probably 85 by this point.
It's still 83.5 right now, but it's only Wednesday afternoon here in the West Coast, so it's very early.
Hey, Dan, don't care.
Over. It don't matter. Until further notice, like, what's there to talk about? Don't think about it. If your book offers Texas Tech points, just go ahead and bet it. I don't care if Lawrence Taylor's smoking crack on the sidelines in a West Virginia uniform, and he's going to show up on the West Virginia defense and wreak havoc. Until further notice, continue to bet all Texas Tech overs. It's out of control. They're going to score in the 50s at least. It's incredible and so fun to watch. So tune in for that.
Dan, who appears more cracked out? not who actually was or is more cracked out, but who appears that way. Lawrence Taylor in his crack doing prime, or Dana Holgorsen now on no crack.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. I don't know if people have seen Dana lately. He looks a little rough. Like, he's been living in West Virginia too long. It's kind of like, I don't know if anyone watches that new American Horror Story, but it's kind of like that. but you know what I mean? That's right. But, you know, like, he looks kind of haggard. Still, I'm going to go with LT because he was a mess for a while. But watch out for Dana. He's coming.
Holgorsen looks like Phil Collins after a 24-hour straight recording session of the No Jacket Required album. Circa, like, 84.
So classic. Good call.
UNC at Miami. Miami suffered their first loss of the season last week, 20-19 to Florida State. A very Richtian loss, if I may coin a term. Very reminiscent of the Mark Richt Georgia days.
Richt. This is an interesting game. North Carolina has a knack for just playing close, so I'm going to take North Carolina in the points.
North Carolina beat Florida State. Miami lost to Florida State. I know, and I always tell people, don't use the transitive property to pick college football games, but when it's 7.5 points, even with the home field advantage, I feel like that's just too much for a team that is capable of beating Florida State, even a slightly down Florida State. So take the points, but I'm not putting, you know, I wouldn't put any money on UNC money line. I don't trust them nearly enough. Them and their 14 future NFL players.
Completely agree.
Nebraska at Indiana. I'll handle this one, Dan. I know you're chomping at the bit, but I'll take this.
Thanks.
So Nebraska's -3.5. Nebraska now ranked in the top 10. I don't know how long it's been, but it's been a while. Probably since like the Scott Frost era. So Indiana. Yes. Indiana. I believe they're a little overvalued in this line because of two reasons. First off, they beat Michigan State. However, we know that Michigan State's no good this year. Secondly, they had a close, and I'm using air quotes, close loss, 38-17 to Ohio State in the same week that Michigan won 78-0 for Ohio State to only win by 3 touchdowns. Makes it seem like Indiana's not bad. But OSU was looking ahead to today's or this weekend's Wisconsin game, so they weren't trying hard in that game. So I would lean Nebraska. However, Nebraska has a lot of injuries, including their best receiver, one of their, I think, their second or third best receivers injured. The running back will play, but he's banged up. The tight end's out. This is going to be a close game. I think Nebraska wins by 7 points, so I would lay the points. Small bet. This was interesting, though. I was reading a website, Crimson Quarry. Sorry. This is an Indiana Hoosiers football and basketball fan site. So this is how dedicated we are to college football. I was reading a Hoosiers fan site earlier. This is homecoming for Indiana. According to this site, which again is a fan site, so I assume they know what they're talking about, Indiana has never in their history won a homecoming game.
That's insanely awful. Like, how is that possible?
I don't know. I did not conduct a fact check on this, but I'm taking their word. So it's homecoming. They've never won a homecoming game in their history. They're playing a top 10 Nebraska team. I would love it if you could get this line at 3 points or less, but I think I'd lay it either way. Alabama -13 at Tennessee, possibly the biggest game of the week, at least one of the two huge games this week. I don't have a feel for this. I think Tennessee's been good. They've impressed me, but they've gotten off to very slow starts. Alabama definitely has the tools to come out hot. And if Tennessee, if they start the way they've been starting against other teams, I think they're going to get blown out of this game. So it's incumbent upon Josh Dobbs and company to really come out of the gate hot. And if they can do that, I see no reason why they can't keep it close and cover the spread, possibly even win. Although it's tough to even get those words out. But what do you think?
I don't know. Like, part of me, you know, kind of thinks of like what's happened in the past, but you know, for this one, it's another stay away for me. I just can't touch it either side. It's really tough.
Yeah, you know, I was looking at this game. It's number one versus number nine. You would think you'd have more analysis, but we tell you every week. In terms of gambling, every game's the same.
I want to bet, you know, on Tennessee because of like how much heart they showed against A&M, you know, hanging in that game. But I just can't bet against Alabama, and it's just a really tough spot. Like, it's a fun game to watch. I just want to enjoy that one and not have any money on it. Like, that's honestly how I feel, and that sounds kind of lame. But it's the truth. Like, one of those games is going to sit back and go, oh, yeah, turn on the Alabama game for a bit. Like, fuck yeah. Just watch that. Just chill.
I agree 100%. My heart says Tennessee can cover this and keep it close, but my head says the number one rule of take the points is do not bet against Nick Saban. So I'm staying away, and I apologize to everyone who thought they would get some great analysis, but this is just not the game to spend your money on.
No, not at all. Stay away.
Kansas at Baylor. Dan, your beloved Baylor Bears, at least, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, I don't know if you consider them beloved anymore, but they're a 34.5 point favorite. They're ranked 5-0. They're ranked 11th. The record's 5-0. I'm tired tonight. I'm losing it.
You're good.
As I mentioned, they haven't looked impressive. And Kansas is coming off a 1 point loss to TCU. Here's how bad Kansas is. They lost by one last week, and everyone's like, oh my God, this is a new reborn Kansas team. Of course, they're 1-4, 1-5. They're terrible. They might not win another game. Here's their remaining schedule. I wrote this down too, because I don't think they're going to win again. At Baylor, Oklahoma State at home, at Oklahoma, at West Virginia, Iowa State, Texas, at Kansas State. You see a win on that schedule?
Maybe Iowa State, but probably not.
That's a 1-11 team. Dan, we talk about UConn and their Fiesta Bowl, which we think might have been a hallucination. Let us not forget that Kansas in 08 played in and won the Orange Bowl.
Yeah, that, Jesus. Yeah, that was a long time ago, apparently.
That happened. Less than 10 years ago, Kansas was an 11-1 Orange Bowl champion.
Unbelievable. And then they turned into the worst team ever. And Mr. Amazing NFL coordinator Charlie Weiss, the genius, showed up and ran it into the ground after he ran Florida's defense into the ground, offense into the ground. So pretty bad.
So I guess bad the job. Question with this game is Baylor good enough this year? Do they have the firepower to win by 35?
Yes, they do, but I don't think they're going to. So I'm not going to bet it, but I'd stay away.
Kansas has their best defense since that Orange Bowl team. I know that seems weird, but since the guys on that Orange Bowl team left, this is the best Kansas has been in, what, 6 or 7 years?
Yeah, at least.
Again, not saying a lot, but they're not an automatic blowout as they have been in past years. They'll still lose every game, and they'll still probably be 1-11 or maybe 2-10, but you can't count on them to get blown out like the old days, Dan.
Ah, life sucks.
Back in my day, you could turn on a Kansas football game. I mean, you couldn't turn it on because they're not on TV, but you could go on Justin.tv, you could watch a Kansas football game, and you could know they're going to lose by 70. And now, they might even cover a spread. Things have changed, Dan.
Completely unacceptable.
America's gone downhill. This is what Trump is talking about. Things have gone way downhill. Can't even bet on a Kansas game with certainty anymore.
Unfreaking believable. Grab Kansas by the point spread.
There it is. Wake Forest at Florida State. Florida State minus 20.5. Wake Forest, my secret college football crush of 2016, dominates the Syracuse Orange, moves to 5-1. Their only loss is to a decent NC State team, as we've said. We don't know about Florida State. Florida State looked shaky starting the season, but when you look at their schedule or their you know, played games now. They have two quality losses. They've got Louisville and they've got a tight one at UNC. They've beaten Ole Miss. They've beaten Miami. They've beaten a pretty decent South Florida team. Maybe Florida State is pretty decent. Maybe we jump the gun writing them off.
They aren't horrible, and they aren't, you know, national title level either. You know, they're,
they could be like a 15th ranked team.
I was going to say between 12 and 18. So exactly, there you
go. That's literally, somewhere in there. Literally between 12 and 18.
That's, we're good at the maths.
That's right.
So, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, that's who they are. So, you know, just kind of measure them from that perspective, not a, oh, they're going to smoke everyone 55-0. You know, I mean, it's not like that every year.
So do you have a pick? What do you think?
Ooh. Wow. I'm going to lean an over in this game. What's the total? Do you have the?
I don't know.
I would lean an over in this game. I think there's going to be some points.
I like my boys, the Deacons, to cover. I'm a little bit afraid to bet it. If you lose and Florida State blows out Wake, you're going to look at yourself and say, I just picked Wake Forest against Florida State, and you're going to feel stupid. Part of my gambling strategy is even when I lose, I don't want to feel like an idiot. So I'll probably stay away, but I think Wake Forest can cover that line. I think they can keep it within 18 points.
Oh, my God. Craziness.
Congratulations, Wake Forest football fans. You're 5-1, and you may keep it within 3 touchdowns of Florida State. USC -8 at Arizona. 10. Not too good, either of these teams. Things are not going well in LA or wherever Arizona is.
Tucson. No, Arizona's bad. Utah smoked him in the second half last week. Of course. USC is just, you know, wasting their time. Like, they're also in the same boat as Oregon. There's no excuse, especially now that the Rams are there. They got to throw $8 million a year to coach and get a superstar. So until they wake up and get a head coach, you're going to have these bullshit, you know, 7-5 years where you're playing in the Las Vegas Bowl on December 23rd. Against Arizona State. You know, it's a waste of your time.
So I think this game is a stay away then?
Yeah, both teams suck. And I have no idea who's going to show up or if it's going to be an over or under. Like, the Pac-12 is really weird this year, and it's hard to get a feel on which version of what team's going to show up every week.
Hey, Dan, let's pause for a moment and take a ride on the coaching carousel. What? It's the worst term.
The coaching carousel of love.
Yes. I lost my train of thought. Oh, okay. So I want to run this by you. Who are the coaches you think will be fired in the near future during the season? Who will be fired at the end of the season? And which programs that you think will come open are the most attractive openings? So we already have LSU. We can assume Eddie O will not be the permanent coach there.
I wish.
Oregon, USC, you think those jobs will come open?
Oh, yeah. So you got LSU, Oregon, USC.
Texas?
Texas for sure will be open.
How about Dana Holgorsen over at West Virginia?
I think Jimbo Fisher is going to leave Florida State and go to LSU. So I think in reality, Florida State's going to have the job opening. I think Florida will wait one more year before making a change.
Florida's only a couple pieces away. I would stick with McElwain. I like him as a coach. He was saddled with pretty bad talent when he came in there. I think he's done a pretty nice job with what he has. I'd give him another year or maybe two. Depending on which direction they're headed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I know. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, he gets the rest of this year, probably all of next year. And unless they're really showing some improvement late next year, he might be gone. It's possible.
So Butch Jones is off the hot seat. Kevin Sumlin, is he off the hot seat?
Yes, Sumlin's off the hot seat unless they tank out and lose 5-6 or something. Same thing for Butch Jones. Like, both guys are fine as long as they finish with 10 wins or, you know, probably 9.
So then my next question, where does Tom Herman go? Because he's got to be one of the top, if not the top prospect. And then who are the names that go to these other places if we have so many big openings and there's only one Tom Herman or one Jimbo Fisher? Who else do we look for?
I think also for coaches that are gone, you got to remember, I think James Franklin's getting fired too. So
you think so?
I do. Yeah.
Opinion is very split at Penn State.
Gone.
Some of the people who work for the school have come out and basically said that he's staying. Of course, you never know what that means, but they indicated that they understand how tough it is there and that they're not the powerhouse they once were. And well, so I think they're starting to judge James Franklin by a different standard, a standard that, say, Pitt or a team like that would judge their coach by, which doesn't make me happy as a fan. But what can you do?
Yeah. And possibly in this crazy 2016 world, which we talked about on the podcast in September, and you thought I was crazy, Brian Kelly is not safe either.
Brian Kelly has done a great job there over the years. Of course, they look terrible, very terrible this year. I don't know why. Even the injuries and the suspensions really can't account for how bad they've been. They have a good quarterback. They have good skill position guys. They have a bad secondary, but that shouldn't account for 2-4 records. So maybe I would think he'd get at least one more year, but you just never know these days. So that's way too many openings, Dan. So who are the guys we look to, either, you know, bounced around NFL or college guys or up and coming prospects? I can't think of too many.
No, me neither. Like, there's going to be some really big job openings, but there's not a lot of great coaches out there to pick from.
Tom Herman's going to get like a $20 million offer from somebody.
He should. I mean, from multiple schools. I mean, how could he not? Like, if you're the University of Texas and you're going to fire Charlie Strong, and there's a guy in your state who's winning at a program where he doesn't have near the resources or recruiting ability or money or any of that stuff that this other school can offer, and they're, you know, basically recruiting the same players. I mean, UT would be crazy not to offer him a monster deal. So, you know, but other coaches, you know, we talked about Chip, you know, as crazy as that sounds. It's a couple NFL cast-offs, maybe. A couple up-and-coming college coaches, you know. Maybe Mr. Petrino finds his way out of Louisville into a major Power Five, you know. Who knows?
What about top programs like Oregon, USC, Texas, trying to poach from other big programs? So you talked about Jimbo. I know that Mr. Dabo Sweeney is from the South, and yep, a school like Texas or LSU could give him a huge offer.
Correct.
Maybe better than he could get at Clemson. Trying to think who else. I don't know. A guy like Kevin Sumlin. I mean, Texas A&M is a big school, but are they as big as USC?
No.
I wouldn't be surprised if there's some poaching going on, I guess is my point. I don't know who the specific people will be. What about a guy like Chris Peterson?
It's a valid point.
Remember USC didn't want Chris Peterson because they didn't think he was a good fit for the program?
USC has been such an utter train wreck ever since the, you know what? Probably since that pass interference call in the end zone against Ohio. Or no, sorry. Ever since Vince Young took their soul, that was the end.
Vince Young may have taken a whole program's soul. I think it's important to point out, most people know this, but not everyone. USC, you can blame the players, you can blame the sanctions that they got, but they've just been a mess of mismanagement and bad coaching and just bad decision-making. A lot of it, or almost all of it, is off-field decision-making. So kudos on a terrible job, everyone from USC. And for the fans, I'm really sorry, because you still have the players. You've just been screwed by coaching and management decision-making primarily off the field. Sucks.
Horribly.
All right, moving on to more positive note. Syracuse.
Yeah.
The Cuse hosts Vatek. Dan, you're going to like this stat. This is another one I didn't bother to verify, but it sounded good. After one more game, one more decent game from QB Eric Dungy, that'll be 7 games for the record, he will be in the top 10 for all major SU season passing records. That's attempts, completions, percentage, I think touchdowns or yards as well. That's after 7 games. That doesn't speak highly of the program when you can play 7 games and you can break a lot of, and some of those he's not just top 10, but he's like number 2 or 3. So
that is not speaking very highly at all.
By the end of the season, if he keeps it going, he could be the leader in every category. Eric Dungy. Nothing against Eric Dungy. Pretty good player, but at a school that had Marvin Graves and McNabb, doesn't seem right.
McNabb, no.
Would you like to venture a pick for Vatek minus 19.5 in the dome?
It seems like too many points. I would lean Syracuse.
It does seem like too many for Vatek. Not that I have a ton of pride in Syracuse this year, but I mean, they did lose by about this much to Wake Forest. I think that's what's throwing the line, but Wake Forest is better than Vatek right now. That's what I say.
Oh, yeah.
Take the points. Mm-hmm. Missouri at Florida. Florida minus 13.5. Missouri coming off their bye week, which was preceded by a 42-7 loss at the mediocre LSU. So not a lot of faith in Missouri this week.
No. Missouri's not good. Continue to take the other team whenever going against them. So lay it.
The problem with this game is that Florida doesn't have a great offense. And so you'll lay the 13.5 and you'll think, oh man, it's the third quarter and they only have 12 points. But somehow they'll get like a special teams or defensive touchdown and they'll win 17-0 or they'll win 21-6. They'll get it done and they'll cover, but it's going to take the whole game. So when you bet this one, have patience.
Yeah, it's going to take forever for them to win 24-6.
I want to throw out one note. A lot of people have been talking this week about the Florida LSU game and how it needs to be rescheduled. I heard a few people talk about like the sanctity of the SEC.
Unbelievable.
I want to point out Florida's remaining schedule. So they have Missouri, Georgia, at Arkansas, South Carolina. Then they play Presbyterian, which I think is a church flag football team. And then they finish at Florida State. Florida's not winning out. I would not be surprised if they lost at least 2 of those games. So I don't think you have to worry about the sanctity of the SEC East and Florida's schedule. There was a hurricane. They needed to save lives. They move people. The game might not be played. It's fine. Neither of those teams are going to the playoffs, so it's not a big deal.
I know. It's kind of absurd. It's because of, like, you know, if like one team only finishes with one loss in the conference, then like they'll win a tiebreaker because their percentage will be higher, you know, because if one team's 4-1 and one's 5-1, you know, and then each have a loss and whatever. It's a bunch of
But here's the thing. Let me ask you this. Do you think that Florida will make the playoff?
No, it's a complete waste of time.
Do you think that Tennessee will make the playoff?
No.
So for the New Year's 6 games, those bowl games can select Tennessee or Florida. They could pick Tennessee over Florida if they'd like, if they think they're a better draw and a better team. So it doesn't matter. It literally doesn't matter at all if they tie. And that's if they tie. Like I said, I think Florida loses 2 more games.
Very possible.
Utah minus 9.5 at Oregon State. I'll turn it over to you, but I would like to apologize to the Oregon State Beavers. I predicted they would lose to Cal by 3 touchdowns last week, and they won. They won by a field goal, so my bad.
Yeah, that's standard issue, Oregon State. Every year they're good for one upset. Utah's a really weird team. They play a lot better at home than they do on the road, but I think they take care of business, and the Cinderella night for Oregon State's over. So lay it with Utah. Not with a lot of confidence, though.
UConn at South Florida. South Florida, 19.5 point favorite. Dan, It's going to get ugly.
That's where you're wrong. Trap of the week. UConn Huskies, take the points.
Oh, you're not getting off that easy. You need to explain why you picked this.
UConn's been weird this year. Like, they've been playing a lot of close games. Like, sometimes they'll score some points. Defense is allegedly good. I don't know. I just got a weird feeling that UConn's going to play this game closer than people think. So, trap of the week, UConn Husk plus the 19.5.
All right. Agree to disagree.
We'll see.
There was a plane crash yesterday down the street from me, right near the UConn Stadium. It's a good thing they're not playing there. Oh, yeah. Single plane, or, you know, one of those two-person planes. Right. Not like a 747, but...
No.
Things are not going well in East Hartford these days.
I would say not.
Iowa State at Texas. Texas minus 13.5. Dan, I really thought this was going to be your trap of the week.
You would think, but it's close. But I also still like Iowa State in this game as well.
I like Iowa State in this. There's not a lot of games I like this week, but this is one of them. I think Iowa State's been heating up, so to speak. Texas is a mediocre to slightly above average team, so take the points. Yeah. Tulsa at Houston. Houston minus 21.5. On a scale of 1 to 10, how devastating was the loss to Navy?
It was really bad. It sucked. Well, first of all, it killed a five-way parlay I had. I got the other four right. It was lame. And it's a letdown spot, you know, for their season. They know they can't play for a title probably. So, yeah, it's really lame. So, you know, motivation carries over this week. It's going to be tough for Houston to get their heads up for this one, but maybe part of them really just wants to go out and play and get the last game behind them. Over under 73.5, that is my lock of the week, the over. I think there'll be a lot of points this game. Tulsa can score as well. So over 73.5. Houston, Tulsa, lock of the week.
It's going to be really interesting to see how they respond mentally. We'll see what kind of coach Tom Herman is. We know he's a good coach, a great coach, but this will really show his mettle, I think, if he can get this team to win out, or at least win out aside from the Louisville game, and to really play strong. You know they're devastated, so.
Yep.
It'll take some good coaching and some good motivation to get them at least playing well for the rest of the year. They're still not out of a New Year's Six game. Because they started ranked so highly, they're still in a good spot to be in that New Year's Six. Although there are a couple of non-Power 5 teams that are looking pretty good, including Boise and San Diego State. So we'll see how that goes.
True.
Got some talent in the non-Power 5 teams this year.
Absolutely. It's really fun.
Ole Miss minus 7.5 at Arkansas. Chad Kelly got in a fight in a high school football game.
Yeah, he did.
I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Yep, true story. That's really scary laying more than 7.5 with Ole Miss on the road, so I won't do it. So I'm just going to go ahead and take Arkansas at home, plus 7.5.
I agree. Tough-fought SEC game. These teams have similar styles of play. I think this could be a shootout. This has double overtime written all over it to me.
I would love that.
Southern Miss at LSU. LSU minus 24.5. Dan, rest in peace to Mike the Tiger.
I know. Very sad moment.
He is, for those who don't know, he's the LSU mascot, the sixth tiger. It's like the Georgia situation where they just have the same type of animal and they just name him like Ugga 2, Ugga 3. Yep. Mike the Tiger 6 died of cancer after a 4-month battle with cancer. Very sad.
He was just upset about less. We all know that's the truth. It's also kind of symbolic, too. This is too many points for me to lay with LSU also, so I'm going to stay away. I'm not going to bet against them, but I'm not comfortable laying that many.
Stanford at Notre Dame. Notre Dame minus 3 for some unknown reason. They are at home. Who would have thought 6 weeks ago that this would be a completely meaningless game?
Completely waste everybody's time. Probably I'd go with an under. No one's scoring.
I've been very unimpressed with Notre Dame. Stanford has at least beaten some decent teams this year. I know they got waxed by Washington, but I feel like they need to beat this Notre Dame team.
Yeah, for sure they should.
Money line, Stanford. Arizona State at Colorado. Well, this one's all you. Colorado, man, give it up for them.
That's right. We were on the Colorado Buffaloes early this year. It's paid off. I'm going to stick with them. Arizona State blows. Todd Graham should be fired. They have all the facilities in the world. So stupid. Yeah. Colorado Buffs. Let's go Buffaloes.
It's a sad year for Arizona football, Dan.
Horrible. Horrible year. And the Arizona Cardinals suck, too. It's great.
We'll do a moment of silence at some point in the near future.
Yeah, it's a bad year for Arizona football. We'll do a moment of silence and take a knee.
We will. Not yet, though. They could always turn it around and pull an upset at some point. Moving along, though. I really can't speak today. UCLA at Washington State. Mike Leach's Washington State team, -4.5. Josh Rosen is questionable, so that might be affecting the line. But I never thought I'd say this, but your Washington-Washington State game may be your game that decides the Pac-12.
That would be so awesome, and I hope it's like really cold and snowing sideways. You know, it's Thanksgiving weekend and all that. So that would be really awesome. Yeah, Mike Leach still holding it down, still knows how to coach football. I mean, he doesn't have obviously the most amazing talent with him at Washington State, but they're fun. They score a lot of points. Really kind of, you know, turn that program around. I mean, if you remember, for years they were winning 3 games only at a time. They were horrible. So hats off to Mike Leach, and obviously hats off to Chris Peterson. So Washington football, even when the Seahawks aren't the best team in the NFL, they somehow, both college teams are good. They're the anti-Arizona right now.
Mike Leach has made an important discovery that when you throw for 600 yards a game, you should usually win. That was something that they were unable to do for the past 5 years. They were throwing for 700 yards in a game, still losing. Now somehow they've decided that if we play a little bit of defense, just a little bit, and we score 48 points a game and we throw for 700 yards, we could actually win a few. So they look good.
They look real good.
Getting ready for that Emerald State showdown.
That's right. Can't wait. Everyone's going to be baked out of their minds.
All right, our game of the week, Ohio State -10 at Wisconsin, going up to Camp Randall. Our main man, Phil Steele, who is the smartest man in college football, he posted something on Twitter I found interesting. The last time Wisconsin was a home underdog against Ohio State was 2010. At the time, Ohio State was ranked #1. The Badgers won the game 31-18. So... Now Ohio State is ranked 2 or 3, depending on the poll. Can we have a repeat of history? Wisconsin does have the talent to do it.
Yes. However, I don't think so. I think Ohio State's on a mission to go undefeated. I'm going to actually lay it with Ohio State.
So I like Ohio State a lot in this game as well. And I feel like their game against Indiana was, in a way, playing possum or playing coy for their true mission, which is to just win out. I think Urban Meyer, Dabo Sweeney, these guys have realized that what you need to do to win a championship, to get into a playoff, is just to win your schedule and go undefeated. Sometimes you even get in with one loss, but you have to win your conference. Whereas guys like Jim Harbaugh, who are new to the Big Ten and new to the playoff system, still trying to blow teams out. They don't realize that blowing teams out doesn't really help you that much anymore.
No, exactly. Good point, Z.
So Urban Meyer, although he does like to blow teams out from time to time, I think he gets it. And I think they were playing coy a little bit last week. I think you're going to see Ohio State come out and really, really send a message. Now, Wisconsin's got a really good defense and they've got a running game. They control the time of possession. So Ohio State can't beat them by 60 or 70 points. They just won't have the time in the game to do that. But I think Ohio State controls this game. And I think they win, I'm going to say, tough one, 18 to 24 point margin of victory.
Yeah, I like Ohio State a lot. 38-13.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I was going to say something like 42 to 20.
There you go.
Actually, Wisconsin can't score 20, so yours is more right on, like a 32 to 7.
There you go.
All right. Not a ton of insight there, but I just have a feeling about that game. Dan, any other games you like? Any lines you like?
No, it's kind of a weird week for college for me. I really liked the past 2 weeks a lot, and this week I'm not really feeling a lot. I'm probably going to sit back and have a really, really light week. Not by, you know, choice. I don't like doing this, but this one might be a fun one just to kind of chill and watch a couple games. But, God, it's been crazy the last couple weeks with the Tennessee games and some crazy, you know, matchups amongst top 10 teams. So kind of nice just to have a normal college Saturday.
We say that going into every week, that it'll be quote unquote normal. And we know that that means there's going to be three triple overtime games all ending at the same time. Something crazy will happen.
Oh yeah, for sure.
All right. On to the most important question of the day. What's it going to be? And keep in mind, we can do a couple topics if you'd like. We're done with football. We can talk about the following topics. A reminder to everyone. The MacGyver reboot.
Okay.
My theory about World War III. Our choices for the third best Weezer album. Our annual rant about legalizing sports gambling. Or I can make fun of people who start sentences with "as a father."
Those are all really good options.
Well, pick your favorite. Maybe we can do two of them, and we can always carry stuff over to next week.
Okay, I'm going to pick two. We're going to start with World War III.
Okay, this is not as funny as the other theories, but I feel like I have a Nostradamus-esque prediction, and I feel like I want to get it on tape in the event that it happens or that it comes to fruition and that people can look back and say that I was the guy who told us what was happening.
Also,
you know, you're a student of history, so I thought maybe you could contribute something to this theory. So, World War I, as many people know, was called the Great War. It wasn't called the World War I until many years later. So we didn't consider it a world war at the time. You know, it was just this big Great War. And this one, I wrote a bunch of notes. I'll just read these, and it will all come together at the end. So World War I has a verified sort of start date, which is the assassination of Franz Ferdinand, the band, of course, not the guy.
No.
Somebody murdered the band, and people didn't like that. So it has an actual start date. World War II, on the other hand, we have a start date. We think of it as having a start date because we're the United States, but it's actually kind of disputed. You know, some people say it started in like 1937. Some people say it started in like 1939. There was kind of this conflict going on for a while, and it was never really officially like, okay, you know, it's on now. So it was kind of boiling before we realized it. Flash forward to the modern day. We are in what year, like 14 or 15 of the war in Afghanistan and like 13 of the war in Iraq. We've already been embroiled in these situations for longer than either of the other two world wars. Much like World War II, the wars we're in now, they happen because of this long string of events caused by the previous world war. So you look at sort of the aftermath of World War II and Russia and the Cold War, and it all sort of led up to what we have now. So here's my theory, Dan. We talk about World War III as like a dystopian future event. Like, this guy's going to do something crazy and he's going to start World War III. What are the odds that we will look back in 20 or 50 years and realize that we are already in the middle of World War III right now?
Actually, pretty high. I think this is. And I think that you and Nostradamus are on the same page, because I think he said that the third Great World War would involve, like, the Middle East and, you know, nuclear stuff and
did
all
he?
Stuff.
God damn it, Dan. This was my time to outshine Nostradamus.
I know. And, like, I know that you didn't know that, which makes this even better. So
the thing about Nostradamus is he just said everything. He just made 8 million predictions, and then some of them came true, and a lot of them contradicted. So he's like, World War III will start in the Middle East. And then in another book, he's like, World War III will start in Antarctica. Then later, yep. He's like, World War III will involve Canada. And then later when it happens, he's like, see, I told you.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I'm trying to do.
Well, you have it on record on Take the Points, and you didn't even know what he said. But I think you're right. I think people will say that this third war probably did start, you know, in 1992. And it's just been continuing since then. So, or 91, I guess that was.
Because we look at it, we're America. We're like the we're the number one force in this. In the other wars, we just sort of joined in later on. And we were among the ones who started this. And now the other countries have jumped in, and more countries may even jump in if this keeps going. So we might not have the perspective because, like I said before, the countries who started in the other world wars didn't consider them world wars at first. Now, this one obviously would have a much longer buildup, but.
Okay. Very interesting, Z. I agree. I like it. Because you gave such a great answer, I'm interested to hear your feelings on a MacGyver reboot.
All right. But first, Dan, you can give a one-word answer if you want, or you can expand. Third best Weezer album. It's a tough call. Obviously, Blue and Pinkerton are 1-2 in some order. Anyone who disputes that is wrong, flat out. But this third one, it's tricky.
Maladroit, was that one?
Yeah, see, the reason I thought of this, I've been listening to Maladroit today. My choice was the Red album. I like the Red album. But okay. Maladroit is sneaking up, and I think it's a competition between those two.
Maladroit had a couple of kind of unique songs on it that didn't sound like them, which I kind of liked.
It was heavier than the others. The only problem with Maladroit, it came out in the time when Stained was big, and so ooh, there are a couple songs that sound a little like Weezer doing a version of a Stained song. Which I know how much you love Stained, so you probably appreciate that.
I'm a big Aaron Lewis guy. Yeah, no, I'm not.
Your impression of Aaron Lewis in college is still one of my favorite things of all time. All right, Dan, MacGyver reboot. This is another world-shattering theory. Actually, it's not, but I think people will enjoy this. So
Hold on. Wait, hold on. Are you reading notes on your computer about this MacGyver reboot right now?
I have like three notes because I don't want to forget anything. So this is, I've got the theory in my head, but before I talk about the theory, I just want to talk about the theme song. And I wrote these down because I didn't want, this is what my notes are because I didn't want to leave anything out.
I love it. Take it away, Tom.
So the new MacGyver sucks. And I'll get into that in a minute. But one thing that really sucks about it is the new theme song. Like, you're rebooting a series. You have to make new characters. You have to have new stories. The one thing you do not have to change is the theme song. The MacGyver theme song from the original MacGyver is a great, great theme song. I know it's a little bit long for a modern day show, but it's not something you need to mess with. For some reason, they made like a slow down, trippy EDM type version of it. It's really bad. But what I wanted to mention, so the original theme, now they just show some weird graphics, but the original theme had clips from the show. And in the original theme song, these are the clips. These are my notes. There's one where MacGyver is just sitting there licking an ice cream cone. This is a show about a secret agent running around the world. And this is like the best clips they could pull out for their theme song. One, he's licking an ice cream cone. One, he's looking at a bad guy. He sort of motions to the side like, hey, look over there. The bad guy turns and then he slaps the gun out of his hand. So that's good. And then the best scene, there's one where MacGyver is running on a boat and he jumps off of the boat into the ocean. But if you really pause and look closely, he's being chased by a guy in a gorilla suit. I don't know what episode that's from. I've never seen the actual episode. But if you pause it, there's a guy in a gorilla suit chasing him off a boat.
And that's great.
One more thing I'd like to mention about the MacGyver original theme. I'm trying to set a Guinness World Record for longest conversation about the MacGyver theme song. But this is a little inside knowledge from a big fan of the original show, Dan. So around season 5 or 6 of MacGyver, I think it ran for 9 seasons, somewhere in the middle of the show, they lost the footage for the theme song.
What?
Yeah. I'm not sure what happened. I heard a rumor there was like a fire in the building where all the tapes were housed. I don't know if that's true, but somehow they lost it and they had to re-record all of the video images that went along with the opening theme, like the opening sequence. But instead of making a new one or taking new clips, they tried to mimic the from the original season one, but with the new, like, older Richard Dean Anderson. And, they didn't have the same wardrobe, so and he'd be wearing, like, a different jacket, but he'd be doing the same scene.
Like,
I urge people to go look this up, because it's like they tried to do a copy of the original one, but it was just a little bit off.
That's hilarious. Okay, I will check that out.
That's
really
good. It's good stuff. All right, so getting into my theory. So the original MacGyver, I was a big fan of this in the 90s as a kid. I was also a big fan of Home Improvement, so that says all you need to know about my taste in TV. But I like to believe that the original version had its charm, even though, like, no one's thinking it's a great show, right? But it was charming enough. It had Richard Dean Anderson, who was a good actor. It had a unique plot or a unique story. Like, he used science to solve these mysteries. Instead of using a gun or other weapons, he beat his bad guys with science. And there was some pretty clever things. Like, I'm pretty sure none of the science worked in real life, but at least within the show, it was complicated and interesting. The new show, they have replaced Richard Dean Anderson with a, like, young 24-year-old good-looking dude who, I don't know, maybe the guy's a genius in real life, but he looks and sounds super dumb on the show.
Right.
And it's funny because MacGyver is a graduate of MIT, but the actor they got to play him is just like, "Hey, I'm MacGyver." So right there, you fail. Next thing, the ancillary characters. There were two big ancillary characters. There was Pete Thornton, who was a 50-year-old white dude. Now there's a character just called Thornton, who is a good-looking, probably 32-year-old woman.
There you go.
And there was a character named Jack Dalton, who was a late 40s or 50-year-old dude with a mullet in the original one. Now it's this, like, ripped Australian dude from one of the CSIs.
It's unbelievable.
And to make it better, they've added two new characters. There's the good-looking, like, 22-year-old Latina hacker girl who was, obviously, there were no computers for the original MacGyver. So this is a new character because you got to have a hacker now in your show.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is MacGyver's wacky black roommate who, listen, I know that this is a politically incorrect statement, but he was shoehorned in this show for no other reason than to have, like, a wacky black guy. Like,
100%.
He's MacGyver's roommate, which is hilarious because Secret Agent, probably the number one thing you should do is not have, like, roommates.
Yeah, it's high on the list.
But this guy's the only character in the show who he's not involved in the plots whatsoever. He's in usually the first scene and the last scene. He just cracks a couple jokes. He basically acts like a bad version of Chris Tucker in Friday. He's like, "Hey, man." And he runs around. He's like, "What's going on?" And he, of course, he's clueless. He's like, "Hey, how was your conference in Cleveland?" MacGyver's like, "Yeah, good conference." And meanwhile, he's in, like, North Korea stealing emeralds from Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, a conference. Yeah. Learn some stuff. Gonna apply
exactly.
it.
Exactly. So I've never seen a character shoehorned into a plot for no reason other than to have diversity. And then there's the science, Dan. So I talked about the science in the original show. I've read a Wikipedia page about the original MacGyver and all of the science and why it wouldn't work in real life. That's a fun Wikipedia page for people who want to look it up. I think it's called like the science in MacGyver. And it just goes through like 100 episodes and why the science in each one wouldn't work in real life. But in the new series, here are some examples. I jotted these down too. Here are some examples of the amazing science that this MIT graduate came up with. He made a magnet. He dusted a wine glass for fingerprints. And he poured some gasoline into a soda bottle and lit it on fire and threw it at a car.
All innovative techniques.
These are the kinds of things that make you a MIT grad secret agent who, by the way, won't carry a gun because he's so confident in his science abilities. So my point is that my grand theory is that this is really a microcosm for America over the last 20 years and the overall decline of intelligence, that they have to take the one show that is just based strictly on like a smart lead character and they've just dumbed it down, put in a bunch of beautiful people and no plot. And the science is so basic. I wonder if people have just become so dumb, like TV viewers have become so dumb or so disinterested or such a lack of attention that they feel like they don't even need to try anymore.
I think you're right. They just don't care.
Was that enough MacGyver thoughts for you?
No. We're going to shut the podcast down, and then we're going to do a special MacGyver recap, just so I'm all the way brought up to speed.
I've only seen two episodes. I didn't get to watch the third one. Maybe they turn it around in the third episode.
Highly doubtful, but good luck. Okay. Westworld, watch by chance?
I have not watched Westworld.
I think I'm going to watch that tonight.
I have trouble watching shows in real time now. I tend to let them play out over 2 months and then just go through and watch them all in a row.
Yeah, that's kind of smart. Yeah, interesting. You know, Michael Crichton, you know, amusement park run by robots killing people. Sounds kind of fun.
I talked for a long time about MacGyver. Would you like to do any sort of parting shots? Can be about any topic.
No, I think you did great, but maybe next week I'll do the rant on why sports betting should be legal.
Okay, that's an evergreen topic, so we'll save that for a time when there's no hot MacGyver takes.
Well, thank God.
All right, Dan, thanks for joining me as usual, and thank you everyone for listening. TakeThePoints.net, not .com.
No, never.
One day we will get that .com.
Yeah, we're going to own that shit.
But until then, you can reach us on Twitter. People don't like to reach out on Twitter. There's like two people who ask me questions on Twitter. Nobody else. So I'd like to get a third person to that list.
Reach out and touch the rope on Twitter and connect.
It's the fake Tom Z, D Partridge 10. Those are our names. Reach out. Yep. Find us on LinkedIn.
Touch us.
Hit us up on Yammer. Meet us on touchtherope.com.
.net.
Ed Orgeron couldn't get the .com.
Touchtherope.net is a really sketchy website. Like I love that. That's really funny.
They were an affiliate of the Hun back in the day.
Happy hunting, everybody. Have a great week.
All right, we'll end this podcast how we started it. Thanks for listening, everyone. Goodbye.